May it please the court. My name is Doyle Baker. I'm a deputy district attorney from the 4th Judicial District in Colorado Springs, and I represent the people in this appeal. A fair trial to both sides requires jury instructions that accurately state the law. And here, the trial court's instruction defining an investment contract was erroneous as a matter of law. And the error was significant because it allowed Mr. Marshall to assert a theory of defense to the charge of securities fraud that the law does not recognize in Colorado.
Mr. Baker, as an initial matter, I guess there's some disagreement between both sides as to what the instruction actually was. There was an instruction in the record with markings on it. I take it it's your position that that was not the instruction that was given to the jury. It contains two definitions.
Your Honor, there are three documents in the record that are necessary to understand exactly what happened. And one of them is that instruction 14, and it's part of the instructions packet that was submitted to the jury. And if you look at the packet as a whole, you'll see a couple of things in there. One, you'll see that on the very first page, it was file stamped and accepted as part of the official record. You'll also see, if you look at other instructions that we're not taking issue with here, that the judge edited some of those instructions. And it's our position that that is what the judge did with instruction 14. And we're not asking the court to simply look at instruction 14. There are two other documents in this record that are important to understanding what the actual instruction was. And the first document that I'd refer you to is our tendered instruction, which defined a security or an investment contract, rather, as you see in the language of cases like Sauer versus Hayes. And I don't think there's any dispute among the parties when you look at both of our briefs that that instruction was tendered and refused. The judge said, I'm not going to give it. That instruction tracks the language in instruction 14 that is circled and carries the little edit mark next to it. The other document that is important in determining what instruction was given was the transcript of the closing argument. If you look at the prosecution's argument, they were arguing with respect to Ward Berlin and the counts involving him as a victim, that although he was working in Mr. Marshall's company, he was not responsible for managing the investments, and he was relying on that fourth prong of our proposed instruction. He was relying on the essential managerial efforts of the promoter, in this case, Mr. Marshall. When the defense responded to that, their response was, the prosecution is arguing a theory that's contrary to the law. And they quoted what we believe was the instruction given to the jury, which is that last definition in instruction 14 of an investment contract.
Rather than have this court look at the record and try to make some sort of what feels like a factual finding as to what instruction was given, wouldn't it have been easier to move to supplement the record with the instruction that was actually given? And why wasn't that done?
Your Honor, I'm talking with our trial attorneys. Those instructions were not transcribed. So what we have here is the instructions packet. And I think that when you look at the context of everything that's in the record, and at this point, the court is in a position where I think they have to look at what's in the record, and one of two things is going to be the case. Either there's sufficient evidence before you to determine that we preserved this error and that you can review the allegations, or you're going to determine that That's not the case.
When you're saying that the instruction was not transcribed, I understand that often the court reporter doesn't take the instructions down as the court's reading it and put those in the record, but are you telling me that there wasn't a clean instruction that was available? That the only instruction for the record had proofreading marks on it?
Hey, Your Honor, we asked that everything be submitted that was in the court file, and the instruction packet that we got is the instruction packet that is before you.
And is there not a procedure in the appellate rules to have the court basically clarify or correct if there's some sort of problem with the record?
Yes, that is true as well. Our position again, though, is when you take these three documents in context, it's clear that although there are two definitions of an investment contract in this record or in this instruction 14, that only one of them was given. I mean, if the first definition, which tracks exactly the definition that we submitted and was rejected, if that were given, certainly the judge would not have indicated on our instruction that, in fact, he wasn't going to give it.
But did that instruction packet go to the jury?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if the instruction packet went to the jury in this form or not.
How are we going to know if you don't know?
You're not. But
And also, was there a discussion of the instructions that was transcribed?
Your Honor, apparently there was.
Is that in the record?
That is not in the record.
Why not?
Well, there is. Let me back up. There is quite a bit of discussion about the definition of an investment contract in the record, and it occurred at the point at which the expert witnesses were testifying. We made our position known, the defense made their position known, and then we proceeded to present evidence through expert testimony on both of our positions. In that regard, Your Honor, we're relying on a line of cases, most recently People versus Ridgeway, which says that if you submit an instruction to the judge and he rejects it, you preserve the issue for review. And Ridgeway was a case similar to this in that there was an elemental instruction defining the crime of possession of burglary tools, and all that was presented to the court was the proposed instruction from the defense. There was no other record. The Court of Appeals in that case, treating it as a question of law and giving no deference to whatever the trial judge's reasoning was, reviewed that instruction de novo and reached the conclusion that it was wrong as a matter of law. And I think the court can do the same thing here. It's simply a matter of looking at the case law that in Colorado defines this element of a security.
Well, excuse me for interrupting, but our question is, what is the record? What instruction was given? I think that was the first question.
Which instruction in this case was given?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
there's a jury packet. You've just told us that, an instruction packet, and you've told us you don't know whether it went to the jury. The instructions were not transcribed on the record. So we still have the question, what went to the jury?
Well, we have the instruction that we proposed, which was rejected. We have instruction 14, which has two opposing definitions, really, of what an investment contract is. And if we accept that both of these were given, we still have a problem, because what the judge essentially appears to be doing is submitting two different legal definitions to the jury and allowing them, based on that, to apply elements that we believe are not part of the test. But the fact is, in the context of the record as a whole, you have defense counsel reading the instruction that was given verbatim, and he's not reading that first portion of the instruction. And it's interesting to read what he said when he responded to our argument. He said, I want to read you the court's instruction. It's not my instruction. It's not the prosecution's instruction. And it was that second instruction in instruction 14. And the other thing I would add is when you look at the editing marks on instruction 14, they're there for a reason, obviously. The court marked up other instructions as well. The question of what that means, I think there's only one other thing I can think of that one other reason why the judge would write on it like that. It could be perhaps he was doodling and we have a portion of a pig without the head or the legs, but I think that it means something more than that. When you look at that instruction packet as a whole, this is an editing mark, and the intent, consistent with what the judge wrote on our proposed instruction, was that this first definition of an investment contract that's in that instruction is to be removed and not read to the jury.
But aren't you asking us to infer, one, that this means delete, and also to infer who authored the deletion? I mean, how do we know that it was the judge as opposed to one of the lawyers?
Well, it was submitted as part of the court file, and again, we asked for everything in the court file, and it's got all of the instructions that were given to the jury. Several of them, like this one, are edited. And then immediately after that, you see that the judge added the three proposed instructions, one from us and one from the defense, that were rejected. And the context of that indicates, I think, that this is the instruction packet that the judge was working from. And again, when you compare 14 to the instruction that we proposed, you're left with the question, why would the judge write on our instruction, and why would he state on the record that he was not giving it? And then you have an instruction like this that's edited with that definition deleted. I think that based on the record as a whole, it's clear, number one, that the instruction we wanted was not given. Number two, if the court doesn't want to take that step and it doesn't feel comfortable with that, you have an instruction here, instruction 14, that gives two different definitions of what an investment contract is. And it includes in that second definition the solely language that has been so problematic and that courts in this state have backed away from for the last approximately 40 years now. So based on precedent, based on what's in the record, we believe that the instruction that was given, what that instruction was, is clear, and it was erroneous, and we would ask that it be disapproved. If there are no more questions, I'd reserve the last portion of my time.
You have approximately 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Norman Mueller. I represent Mr. Marshall. This is an appeal without an issue. We have the prosecution relying essentially on their tendered and refused instruction, which language appears completely, identically in instruction number 14. Tendered instructions get refused all the time when the substance of the instruction or the language of the instruction is already included in another instruction.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, Judge.
The representation is that instruction 14 was given to the jury with some markings on a portion of it. Is there any dispute in your mind that the instruction with the solely language was given to the jury?
No, there's no dispute in my opinion, because it appears in instruction number 14. Instruction 14 has two following definitions, as it were, of investment contract.
So let me ask you another question. So stated another way, the dispute is whether the instruction requested by the people was given, that there's no dispute that the Soli language was given?
No dispute.
All right, thank you.
So you're saying that the jury was given an instruction with two different definitions?
The second paragraph simply amplifies the first paragraph of investment contract. And indeed, first of all, the second paragraph defining investment contract was recognized most recently. It's a quote, in part, from the United States Supreme Court case in Howey. This court in 2012, in the Joseph case, cited, quoted Howey, that identical language. I believe, Judge Fox, you were on the panel. I don't think you were the authoring judge. That's the most recent case. In the Joseph case, this court also cited the Colorado Supreme Court case in Lowry. So yes, the second paragraph discussing investment contract in the overall definitional instruction number 14, contained the Soli language. But it went on to amplify by explaining to, I think, the benefit of the prosecution, that when an investor is relying on the essential management services of another, of the third party, to get those profits, those essential management services have to be significant. And that's what the second paragraph did. It further defined, it can't just be a de minimis involvement of the third party. It has to be significant. It has to relate to the possible success or failure of the enterprise.
So is it your position that this instruction that we're seeing in the record with the proofreading marks, that that was actually given in that form to the jury?
There's no other. Yes.
Well, I mean, I can understand an argument that says that we don't know what instruction was given to the jury. It probably wasn't the one that was in the record, but it seems a little much to say that because it's in the record that it was necessarily the one given to the jury.
I don't think that's a stretch at all. That's what's in the record, Judge. We have no record of a jury instruction conference other than one page on April 16th of 2012, and the judge says, have I made all the corrections that are to be made? And Ms. Mackey, I did not try this case, Ms. Mackey said, I've checked everything. The one thing I haven't checked, Your Honor, is whether you corrected the interrogatories. And Judge Iupa says, I did. The willfully language appears now. Go look at the interrogatories on the jury verdict forms. The willfully language is there. There are other markings on these jury instructions. Who made them? I don't know. There's no record of what happened. Where is the record that the court or one of the parties says, we've now read the jury instructions, here are the changes I made to those jury instructions? Judge Marquez, you asked, did the jury instructions go to the jury? My experience is the packet always goes to the jury. And let me speculate as much as the prosecution is speculating. They all had jury notebooks, and they all had copies of the jury instructions as originally prepared, which includes that language. Then that went to the jury. Or did the jury get the original packet, and are these marks of some jurors? I don't know. This court doesn't know. The prosecution is asking this court to engage in the most gross speculation to get to their point, which isn't even a reversible error point. There's absolutely no harm in using the Soli language. It relates only to one investor, as far as I can tell from the prosecution's brief, Mr. Berlin. And at the end of the day, the instructions benefited the prosecution by giving the further elucidation that the managerial efforts of that third party have to be very significant. That's what the investor has to be relying on. The instruction is not inconsistent, instruction 14. It may be a little redundant. There's a little bit of repetition. We have a lot of jury instructions that sometimes are redundant.
Okay, I guess I'm seeing that there's actually a disagreement between the two of you as to what the actual instruction was, whether it was this number 14 that's in the record or whether that's just evidence of the one that was actually given the jury. And when I look at Rule 10, it does provide a procedure for clarifying if any difference arises as to whether the record truly discloses what occurred in the trial court. Now, I gave Mr. Baker some grief about not using that rule, but then again, the rule says that this court on proper suggestion or of its own initiative may direct that the omission or misstatement be corrected. And so why shouldn't this court use that rule?
Because number one, it's prosecution's burden. They could have done it. They could, it looks like from the minute orders that there is a, there was some jury discussion, jury instruction discussion the day before. But this court shouldn't be in the business of helping the prosecution try and make a better record. This was pointed out in the answer brief to the many deficiencies in their failure to preserve. And Your Honor, if I was standing up here representing Mr. Marshall after conviction, and if I was saying they gave the wrong instruction, I would get nowhere because there's no adequate record to support my argument. And there's no adequate record to support this argument. And this court should not engage in what I'll bluntly call activism to say, let's send it back and see if they can make a better record. And if you get to the end of the day, to the substance of the question, there is no reversible error. Well, it's not reversible because it's Mr. Marshall was acquitted. There can't be a new trial. This is at most an advisory opinion. And where is there one case in this state or in the country cited by the prosecution or cited by the amicus that says, if you happen to use the word solely in a definition of investment contract, that's wrong. That's error. To the extent that the prosecution makes the point that the Foreman case, the second U.S. Supreme Court case, modifies the Howard case, that modification was covered in this instruction because it says that the efforts of the third party, the managerial efforts, have to be significant, and they have to be so significant that they might affect the failure or success of the business, and that was given. So this is an appeal without an issue, certainly without an adequate record. And that's why in this case, this court has been very diligent in the last several years sanctioning counsel to the extent, I'll call it sanction, but under the DePro case, which I cited in my answer brief, when there is an inadequate record, that's the responsibility of the parties. And when they can't say, where's the objection to instruction 14? We don't see an objection to instruction 14. Did the prosecution acquiesce to instruction 14 at trial? Because it contained, as it does, the language of their tendered instruction. I can tell you there have been a number of times when I've tendered instruction early on and the judge says, I'm going to refuse that, I'll put it in the record, but I don't need to give it because it's already in the record. And for all those reasons, Your Honors, we think this is a case where the appeal ought to be dismissed. At a minimum, it should be the judge's decision should be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.
Three points in response to Mr. Mueller. First, we didn't acquiesce to the instruction that was given. We gave an instruction, or we proposed an instruction, rather, that did not include the solely language, and that was tendered and refused. Number two, that second paragraph in instruction 14 that defines an investment contract is wrong, and it's wrong regardless of what that first paragraph says, and it's wrong regardless of whether that definition in the first paragraph was given to the jury. And there's approximately 40 years of cases from this court stating that. And here's why it's important, and this is point number three. Their expert came to trial, and when confronted with the cases of this court and how they said that the sole language should not be used, his response was, those cases are a lazy restatement of the law. Implicit in that is an invitation to a jury and a judge to ignore the opinions of this court. That is a concern to the district attorney. It's a concern to the securities commissioner who filed an amicus brief in this case. And we took this appeal because we believed that it might be a concern to you. We would ask that the instruction that was given be disapproved. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. Your arguments have been very helpful. This case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.